One, case number 348819, In Re Estate of Tiana Seville.
Good morning to this honorable court. Scott Grable on behalf of the petitioner appellate Tanya Phillips. I rely on the brief filed by us as well as the reply brief, and I'll keep my comments brief. First of all, I want to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if it's necessary. I don't think it's going to be a lengthy argument. First thing I want to comment on is the standard of review. My colleague indicates that he believes it's a different standard review than de novo. I would indicate, looking at the lower record on page 22 and 23 of the transcript, our position is the court didn't err in the findings of fact. It was the interpretation of the law. And if you look at page 22 and 23, which is cited in both my reply and appellate brief, the court says, again, I hate to rephrase, so to me, as a matter of law, it's again not a question of who's the better parent. If that was the issue before me, I have a feeling that I would go one way or another. That's not my consideration. The consideration to me is what's the legal status.
So you think it's an abuse of discretion?
No, I think it's a de novo review because it's a question of law. Did the court apply the proper law? If we were fact-finding what the court's position was on fact-finding, then certainly I would expect this court to give deference. Frankly, no matter what the court thinks the standard review is here, I believe it's cited correctly in my brief. It's a de novo review. But I think simply reading this short exchange here and the offers of proof, it seems to me, in my interpretation, that the court felt that the priority of the parties in this case was sacrosanct, and no matter what was offered as proof could not penetrate that veil, so to speak, and that's it.
Well, let's get back to the scope or the standard of review. What about In Re Kramick Estate or Duane B. Baldwin Trust? Don't they suggest that abuse of discretion is the proper standard of review?
My reading of those cases, I think abuse of discretion, if you're questioning the lower court's analysis of factual findings, I don't believe the cases indicate, number one, if it's a question of law, if the court purportedly misapplied the law or the analysis of the law, I don't think that's abuse of discretion standard. I think it is a de novo, but either way, certainly I'm going to defer to what this court's analysis is. If they do believe, as Your Honor has stated, that's abuse of discretion.
You still win. That's your position.
Absolutely. And I don't make that statement lightly. I'm well aware what the definition of abuse of discretion is. I'm certainly not conceding that, but I think certainly if this court interprets the issue on appeal as a question of are we deferring to the facts of the judge, it may be abuse of discretion, but here the court has indicated it's the law that's the issue. I think the lower court has indicated, listen, they're both the same priority, which again, we're not disagreeing with that analysis. They certainly are. We have a father, we have a mother, but the court, in my opinion, did not go through a suitability analysis. Now, I've read the other brief to suggest that, well, the court took the offers of proof. It's inferred in the record and the court's opinion that the court did in fact do that. That's a stretch. In my opinion, the argument is absurd. You're telling me that the lower court avoided using the word suitability and just sort of was circling the wagons on it, but he meant that? My question is, let's assume you took that argument at face value. Well, I think he considered the suitability arguments. Wouldn't you expect the court to say to the attorney, lower court, is that all you have? Because if you don't have more on your offers of proof, this isn't going to get you on the hurdle. I don't think the party is unfit or unsuitable. The fact is, this record, at best, if you interpret it favorably towards the appellee, you're certainly left with some question marks on whether, in fact, that the court went through the suitability analysis. Now, am I saying the court can't accept offers of proof? It must conduct an evidentiary hearing? No, I'm not standing for that proposition at all. I'm standing for the proposition, the court, and I have the utmost respect for this judge. I know him. He's well-respected. He's an excellent judge. But looking at this record, I would hope, in all due respect, that he would make a somewhat clearer record and say, listen, I'm considering suitability. I don't think, based on the offers of proof, that Mr. Seville is unsuitable, and that's what we're going to do. I'm not going to hear any more proofs. I take the offers at face value. He even alludes to some comments in there, well, if this was a custody case, you know, we might go different or we might go that. He's indicating if we were arguing merits of, you know, who is the better parent or who, you know, has those equities, but we're not. It's straight, pardon me, DNA, if you will, on priority.
So you want us to reverse and remand for the appointment of a third-party personal representative?
No, I don't. What I'm advocating is the court to reverse and remand to conduct a evidentiary hearing, or the court instructed to conduct the analysis of suitability, frankly, to be fair to my colleague, of both the parties, because there was a motion filed declaring that my client was unsuitable. So to be fair and not be disingenuous, he certainly has his right to a day in court if he wants to declare my client's unsuitable. Assuming either both, or obviously if both parties hypothetically are rendered unsuitable, certainly then I would expect the court, either through stipulation, to appoint a third party. But let's say my bigger concern, hypothetically, is if both parties are declared suitable. I think at that particular point, I think the parties could agree, and at this point, we've worked as co-representatives, you know, that's not going to be a problem. I don't think the court should have to appoint a PR. If Mr. Seville hypothetically was declared unsuitable, then I would, and my client survives a suitability challenge, she would be the co-PR. My bigger concern is if both parties are not unsuitable, then although I don't have any specific case law in my brief, I would interpret that the court should pick the better of the two. If this court is not inclined to advance that position, then I would say conduct a suitability hearing and then allow the court to, I guess, rule on that, and then at that point we can determine what's appropriate. Again, I understand we're not here to determine if the parties could work together, but to be honest with you, the parties can work together. That's not the issue here, that we can't work with the other attorney. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It seems to me if you have these kind of problems, they haven't been able to work together. So wouldn't, I'm just asking the question, but wouldn't it just make sense understanding that there's going to be a problem if you continue to have those two parties involved to maybe go elsewhere, you know,
well,
who knows?
Well, to let you know, Your Honor, I don't think it's a question, to be fair, and obviously my colleague's going to have a time to articulate his opinion. The parties have worked together with no issue. And I don't speak for my colleague here, but I would be surprised if he gets up here and says, this has been, you know, fire and water. It hasn't been a problem at all working together. The question isn't, can we not work together efficiently? We can. That's my position. There's nothing that I think has occurred in the last couple months why this has been up on appeal to suggest otherwise. The question is, as a matter of law and potentially a matter of fact, is if one of the parties are unsuitable, that issue is not determined. This isn't a question of we can't work together. And remember, these were offers of proof. So just so you understand, the court made those comments on they can't work together based on offers of proof. I don't think you're going to hear from my client if she testifies at a hearing potentially that we can't work together. If the party is unsuitable, I don't think that's dispositive on the issue. I think the question is if one party is unsuitable, they shouldn't be forced, they shouldn't be awarded to be a representative or a co-representative. But if this court feels differently, then obviously we would not want to appoint a third party, because at this particular point, we can work together. That's not the issue. My position is if one of the parties is unsuitable, why should we have to? Assuming we could meet that burden. I don't think we should be forced to, but please don't let the offers of proof simply convince this court, oh, the parties can't work together because there were offers of proof.
Wasn't there a no contact order and a lot of contention throughout?
It was during a divorce, to be fair, in the 90s.
But
so that's a long time ago.
People. Well, okay, all right.
And I didn't mean to cut Your Honor off. I don't think there's anything from this. Again, remember, we're talking offers of proof. Certainly, if the court, after hearing offers of proof and questioned the parties, and remember, when this hearing was done, We did not have the ability where we've worked with the other council. Again, I don't want to speak for the council. He's more than capable of speaking for himself, but to let the court know, because it seems to me Your Honor has a concern about that facet of the case. I would say that the case has moved very efficiently through the civil process. Now, I'm not the civil attorney of record, but I am aware of that, and I can tell that's not the problem. If the court was saying the whole test is, can you work together?
Okay.
We can. I want to make that clear. So I'm simply asking to at least go through that suitability hearing, but if the court, the lower court, after hearing proofs, decides that the parties can't work together, that may be, I would leave that to the discretion of the lower court. I don't foresee that as being a problem. I would just ask the court to see if they feel this record, if the court applied the correct standard. Again, simply stated, the court felt that priority, you know, sort of solves the day. I think priority is important, but if one or both of the parties unsuitable, unsuitability trumps that.
All right.
Of course, and I appreciate the trial court didn't use the word suitability, but the statute doesn't define suitability, correct?
Well, no, the case law does, and Ray Hutton does. That's correct.
But didn't the trial court conclude that neither party individually could objectively and fairly administer the estate? And isn't that, in effect, a finding that neither one on their own is suitable for that role?
I think that certainly, I guess I would ask the court, if the court felt that, I would like to hear, I'm not sure what the court's rationale was, I don't know, but if the court felt that, and let's say this got remanded back, even for clarification, we would certainly be happy to continue as co-representatives. I don't know what the court's feeling was, because I think the record is sort of, it's hard to parse what exactly the court meant. Now, I'm not disagreeing with Your Honor. I don't know what the court's analysis was.
It does say the trial court explained that it had appointed the parties as co-personal representatives because the parties held strong, quote, strong animosity towards each other, and it was not convinced, this is the court that is, it was not convinced that either of them individually could objectively and fairly administer the estate. The appeal followed. I mean,
so counsel, doesn't the law then command that if no other priority person steps forward as personal representative, then the court must appoint a third party?
Well, again, but to be fair, Your Honors, it was just based on offers of proof. I think if a court is going to go ahead and remove either party or both parties in the court's proposition, I would certainly ask this court and beg this court, don't you think the court should at least hear proofs beyond the attorney's offers of proof? Because I understand at that point they can't get along, they can't, but their offers of proof. I think the court would say, before I make that extraordinary step and remove purportedly mom and dad and appoint a third party, I would certainly argue, listen, I'm hearing this from the attorneys, not that we're not taking the attorney's assertions at face value, but don't you think we should at least hear from the parties and clarify? I'm not asking here for this court to appoint my client, PR herself, and boot the other individual. Not at all. That would be disingenuous and inappropriate. I'm simply asking for this court to allow the probate court to give clarification, to answer the questions that you've posed, Your Honor, and you've posed, to clarify. And if the court, let's say, agrees with Your Honors and says, here's my concerns, I'm going to add a little bit more clarity to this, can we work together, can we not, this is how I feel, that's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking that the other party here should walk out, or Mr. Seville's gone from the case, or both parties are gone. I'm simply asking this court, in the interest of clarity, just to give the lower court the ability to perhaps clarify. And I don't think it's going to slow it down. The civil suit has been filed here. It's moved along efficiently. That's all I'm looking for, is clarity of the record in the lower court.
Statement in the statement of issues presented, any reference to questioning whether or not the court entertained information in this case in an unsuitable or a non-conforming fashion, like offers of proof. The only issue really raised in this case has to go to multiple personal representatives and unsuitability. So it doesn't appear that that's an issue we have to confront.
Well, as I see the issue framed, as I said, I'm not asking, and I want to make it very clear, we are not asking for a third party appointment here whatsoever. We are simply indicating if the court went through the proper analysis under the probate code, then we are fine as is with what's going on. I'm simply indicating, I'm at least in my interpretation, that the court did not go through the analysis of suitability. Now, if the court says, I most certainly did, I didn't use the magic word, so be it. I'm satisfied where we sit right now. I just think the record is unclear on that case. But as I said, I don't want this court to be misled. I don't think we can work together, nor we're not asking for the relief of a third party appointment.
What you really want is to go back and have the trial court hold an evidentiary hearing and then appoint your client as the sole personal representative, correct?
If only if we meet the burden of proof. Certainly I would agree if we meet the burden. If we go back and the court says, listen, I'm going to clarify, I did go through a suitability analysis. In my opinion, Mr. Grable or whoever the counsel is, it probably won't be me, you misread my opinion and you misread my oral pronouncement. I most certainly did. Can the parties work together? Where are we at? Now, by the way, I just want to let the court know, nobody has been back since we've been, and I say me, I use the word because I'm not part of the civil matter. Not one time has either party gone back to the probate court of we can't get along, we can't move this case forward. That's not an issue. The issue is, did the court apply the correct standard? And maybe perhaps the court did. I just can't glean that from this record. So I don't want that lost on this court, because the last thing I want this court to do is issue, you know, some order appointing a third party, because it's not in our prayer for relief, nor are we asking it. But I would agree with Judge Boonstra. We're just simply asking for the court to clarify. But you're right. Is my ultimate goal for my client to be personal representative? If she can meet the evidentiary proofs, certainly I would. But again, that would be something we would want to entertain.
Okay, I think we understand.
Let me ask one more question, though.
Please.
Where is the requirement that the trial court hold an evidentiary hearing in making that assessment?
I don't believe there is. I don't believe there is a requirement. I don't disagree. I don't think an evidentiary hearing is required. I don't believe the court erred by not holding an evidentiary hearing, as I said. If the court would have said, I'm taking everything at face value, I don't think either party is unsuitable. If you guys can't work together, I'll appoint a third party, so be it. I just want to make sure we're clear on the record for that. And if we are, I think the court can frankly dispose of that in a quick, efficient fashion that's not going to cause either party any prejudice, my client as well as my esteemed colleague's client. Again, we just want to make sure that the court, you know, applied the correct standard. And if this court gleans something different from this transcript, so be it. We will walk out and we will move forward. When I say we, I speak obviously in the general sense, not to mislead this court. I'm not, as I said, the civil lawyer. We haven't gone back, or none of the civil parties have gone back to court, and we can't get along. We're just simply indicating as a hypothetical, if one or either party is unsuitable, should that party be able to advance the case as a co-representative? I think this court is opining the position, well, we think the lower court already did that, and we think they went through that analysis in that way. If the court believes that, then, you know, again, I'm not asking for any relief. Yeah, I mean, I would say if the court believes that, then I won't prevail. I'm just saying I just don't glean that from this record, but I'm going to, of course, respect the court's opinion. And I just want to make sure I don't walk out of here with a misunderstood what I'm asking for. I want to be very clear on that, because that's not the position we're trying to advance.
Yes,
right.
Do.
I think we got it.
I thank you. Thank you for the court's time. I appreciate the court's analysis.
Response?
Good morning. May it please the court. Tom Beam, appearing on behalf of the appellee. We will stand on our brief unless the court has any questions.
No questions.
Thank you. And I guess no rebuttal.
No rebuttal. I think the court has been, I appreciate the court's time and analysis on this. Thank you.
Thank you both. Case is submitted.